You're listening to a Davenport After Dark podcast. Tune in every Thursday night at 10 o'clock on News Talk 106 to 108. Kieran, are you a member of Generation Y? You are. Yeah. You'd be that age, wouldn't you?
Why do you ask?
You're a millennial. So here's the thing. Do you consider yourself to be politically apathetic, too distracted by consumerism and social media to be, you know, genuinely engaged with the world around you?
I suppose I'm distracted probably by social media a little. I wouldn't say I'm politically apathetic, but then...
You're paid not to be.
I'm paid not to be. I wouldn't be doing, yeah. They mightn't give me a paycheck if I was politically apathetic.
So in your free time, do you practice apathy?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in it. Yeah.
Because that's what your generation is generally accused of. And I hasten to add, by people who are not of your generation. Basically, they call you Generation Me.
Really? Well, I don't know about that. Like, if you look, say, around Europe and everything at the moment, there's, like, protests in Spain, protests in Greece all the time. It's 80,000 people this week took to the streets. I'm sure a lot of them were of my generation. Most of them usually are.
Actually, you know what? That's fair enough. That's a good point. But I suppose here, despite 4 years of swinging cuts, we haven't witnessed protests, anything like what we've seen in Athens. And, well, I guess, again, it's led many commentators to ponder why we won't complain. And they even accuse our youth, you, of terminal apathy. That's the terminal case. Now, our next guest, he begs to differ because he reckons that far from being apathetic, he argues that they're idealistic and committed to change. That's you, Kieran. And the author is David Burstein. He's the author of Fast Future, How the Millennial Generation is Shaping Our World. And he's on the line. David, good to talk to you.
It's great to be with you guys.
So, you know, and as I said to Kieran there, is that's the Generation Y is really Generation Me. It's all distracted by consumerism. You know, they press like on a Facebook page and they equate that with, you know, political engagement.
You know, I would actually take a little bit of a different approach to thinking about this. When this generation looks at how best to make an impact in the world, we do believe in the power of technology to do things and to make an impact. We also believe in the ability of starting businesses and starting organizations to help move that along. And overall, much more quiet kinds of activism that aren't sort of the in-your-face protesting that we've seen in past generations. And that's sort of the way that this generation views their activism and change. For the first time, this generation believes that business is a way to change things. We've seen, you know, people starting green energy companies and tech companies that they believe can help push things in the right direction as opposed to begging lawmakers to do something for them.
But would it not be fair to say that this generation, well, in the privileged West we're talking about, you know, despite economic recession of the last few years, that generally speaking, they're more comfortable than any generation that came before. So they've kind of been mollified by stuff, by, you know, iPads. And I don't want to sound like an old fogey, but, you know, that kind of thing is that like it and again, is that distraction stops them from actually being committed to change.
Well, you know, so the book that I've written, as you mentioned, is called Fast Future. And what that means is we're living in this time where the amount of change that takes place in 1 year is equivalent to the amount of change that's taken place in some entire centuries. So people in this generation have to move fast. We have to adapt. We have to be part of the world of technology and fast-paced communication that's around us. I don't think that's necessarily making us materialistic. I think it's just the language that our world is speaking right now, and particularly with regard to social media, older generations tend to view it as the me generation, that social media is about the individual, but people in this generation view it as sharing, and they believe in the power of sharing things with their friends and with other people to help have a conversation and share ideas and share things and get response and feedback.
You say that we are changing faster than at any other time, and on one level we are, but is that level not strictly superficial? That in effect, you know, we're pretty much how we were in genuine sense, I don't know, maybe 5-10 years ago.
I think it's different. If you look at the way that change has been driven historically, you look at the Industrial Revolution, you look at the introduction of the automobile, and how those things help drive society forward. The underlying force here is digital technology, but that's sort of pulling along with it all these other aspects of our lives and all the, you know, the introduction, for instance, of nanosecond stock trading. That changes the way our business community works. That, you know, the introduction of constant feedback is changing the way our political system is working all over the world. It's certainly changing it in the United States in the way we have to engage, you know, politicians have to be constantly engaged in feedback in every decision, and it's changing it, you know, in the Middle East where it helped power a revolution. It's changing it all over the world.
Now, David, we've got a text in from a fellow, Brian in Kilkenny, and it's the point he makes is that he reckons this generation are far more clued in than ever before. They know everything that's going on all around the world instantly, and they can use this information for good. And he reckons that we're all holding out a lot of hope for them. And I agree with him up to a point. But, and I work in travel, and this generation certainly is aware of the globe from television, box sets, you know, nature programs, whatever, you know, than at any other time in living history. But is the knowledge of the world, you know, knowing that, I don't know, there was a very popular documentary that ran on English television recently, just a documentary about Africa. But is watching the documentary and kind of talking about Africa, it's not the same as actually knowing Africa. Do you know what I mean? So it's that sense of, it's a very superficial kind of knowledge as opposed to actually having experience and ownership of something.
We have to, when we think about this stuff, you know, it's interesting because I have this conversation a lot about, you know, is awareness enough? But we have to take a step back and realize that we have that awareness. That's incredibly important. And, you know, for some people, that's going to deepen over their lifetime. But for other people, it may just stay as that general awareness. But that's progress. That's a positive for people to have the awareness that they live in an interdependent world. Not everybody has to do something with that information. But it sort of gets baked into the way we all live our lives, being aware that there's a world outside of it. In the U.S., I don't know what the statistic is in Ireland, but there's a recent statistic that so over 60% of people in this generation believe they will spend a significant portion of their life living or working in another country. And I think, I would suspect that number is similar in a lot of other places, you know, because there's a sense that we have access to the world around us and we know that we're not living on an island. You can't live under a rock. You can't be unaware of the rest of the world.
Yeah, but like, are we kind of skimming the surface and the, because of, we'll say, the accessibility and the speed at which we can get into information, get the information, does that mean that, you know, I suppose, like, before you might have, if you were interested in, you know, in Greenpeace, or you were invented in like combating AIDS, you had to go out and engage with someone like with an NGO or something that was doing work in the field, and you would have like actually given them tangible help. Whereas now, you know, you like something on Facebook, you retweet something, and you think, oh God, you know, I'm a real green warrior here. I've retweeted what the Greenpeace are saying.
Again, I would say that there's, you know, that it, the best thing that accessibility is doing is it's allowing new people to get engaged in some way, even if that is only tangential, that in a way that, you know, they would never have been able to do before. But the people who are doing the work are still going to do the work. In other words, it's allowing new pathways to access. And everything we know about how young people, you know, form habits that last them a lifetime when they're young, would suggest that if people have exposure and awareness to, you know, social causes and to the global environment they're living in when they're young, and philanthropy, that is going to grow over their lifetime. People, you know, sort of mock this idea of texting and $5, but there have never been more young people making philanthropic contributions than there are today. So what if it's only $5? You know, that over time, that grows because there's a philanthropic sensibility that's now been placed in their mind.
David, I know you've written the book. It's definitely food for thought. But how possible is it to make objective judgments on this generation before the generation's time has actually passed? So something like this becomes another example of that kind of navel-gazing self-centeredness that this generation is regularly accused of.
And one of the reasons I wrote the book, Fast Future, was because I wanted to say this is what this generation is thinking and feeling at this moment. And I think it may, be different in the future. You know, I may need to update the book 10 years from now. But
you might have to update it in a year.
Exactly, exactly.
Yes, we're so quick to change.
But I think that, you know, I think that that is an important piece of it. It's important for a generation to say this is sort of what we believe. And I went around, you know, trying to get those ideas and put them down in a place where everybody could see and understand them.
And then finally, would it be fair to say, and in fairness to this generation, that this is a transition generation? Like, they're in the middle of this digital revolution, which, as you said, is as transformative as the Industrial Revolution was. So, you know, there's going to be the shifting sands all the time with this particular generation.
It is, but this generation is actually leading the shift. We're in the driver's seat, pushing the rest of the world into forward. And so that's the difference. We it may appear as if we're in transition, but we're actually the ones who are driving the transition and driving the change and creating the platforms to move that change, because we understand how to operate in this fast future that I talk about in the book so well, in a way that other generations perhaps don't understand as well.
All right. Well, the book is called Fast Future: How the Millennial Generation is Shaping Our World. The author is David D. Burstein. David, thank you very much for talking to us tonight. That was a Davenport After Dark podcast, live every Thursday night at 10 p.m. on News Talk 106 to 108 FM.